Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. You have found us in the middle of a refreshing story arc, like a mountain stream that Cole and I have stripped naked to swim in and refresh ourselves. And
it'd be cool mountain waters,
right?
They were the lure of this placid, idyllic sylvan surrounding. I'm not very good at romantically waxing poetic.
Like Hernan Cortez sailing from Spain in search of, or was it Ponce de Leon? It was Ponce de Leon. In search for the fountain of youth.
Could have been anybody.
We found it digitally.
Yes.
Right here at Hey Kids Comics. Thank you for joining us. We are in the middle of a story arc, essentially revisiting our first ever issues of Hey Kids Comics. I am, of course, Andrew Farmer, and with me is my
is my
stalwart co-host, showrunner, producer, flapooser, and papooser.
General
jack of all trades and master of every single one of them, the Jedi Cole Houston. Thank you, Cole, for bearing with us through these troubling times that we find ourselves in.
This is, as always, a joy.
It's fun. I had to steal Cole away from preparing for a party to record, so thank you for taking the time out. This is issue 92. Essentially, it is issue 92, Hey Kids Comics Revisited, issue 4, Faith in Four Colors. So if you thought that was a mouthful, wait till we get rolling.
Wait till you get the next issue.
That's right. You should have seen the other guy. So essentially what we've been doing is going back over our first issues and revisiting them, seeing if anything's changed in the last year and a half since we recorded these, see things get better or worse, pick up on anything that we might have missed the first time around, and generally get a sense of where we are as a culture now versus then. Cole, do you have any starting remarks for this guy that we're doing here?
I think one of the things that's really amazing is how much we covered the first time, only to discover how much we didn't cover.
Right. Right. We kind of gave it the buckshot routine the first time and really did an atmospheric blanket of religion and comic books. But there are a lot of specific things that we didn't touch on. I know you had some really good ideas here. I think, you know, I kind of want to start where you let us in, because it's a big one from DC, and I completely slipped my mind the first time around, and honestly, it slipped my mind up until you brought it up tonight to me as something you wanted to discuss. So why don't we start there?
Oh, absolutely, and I think what's interesting is I'm pretty sure we didn't get to this the first time. I'm almost certain. But apologies in advance to anything that we may repeat ourselves on.
Right.
But, yeah, one of the ones that occurred to me that, again, I was fairly certain we didn't touch on last time, when talking about faith, the idea of, you know, the cults.
Right.
You know, how deeply held faith and belief can lead to cultism. And that reminded me of during the Judas Contract storyline in the New Teen Titans, the Marv Wolfman, George Perez.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big part of that plot line was them going up against Brother Blood and the Church of Brother Blood.
Right. Which is interesting, and it's interesting because you don't often hear, there have been very few instances that I can remember in my, you know, 30-odd years of reading comics, where anybody will come out and out, and it won't be a thinly veiled allegory for religion or for, you know, for organized religion, where they just come out with it. They just drop the bomb on your face. And this is one of them where they're like, this is a cult, a demonic cult.
Oh, yes, very much so, to the point where they kind of took the lead of Jonestown.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And there's a lot of Jonestownian theme there because there is like a group who come to investigate other than just the Titans. But it takes it, you know, a huge super step further in many, many ways. Because amongst other things, the cult of Brother Blood has infiltrated, you know, they've got an agent in the national news trying to discredit the Titans, for one.
Right. They work the angles. You know, they want to bring, so essentially the cult of Blood existed in some weird, you know, Tibetan-like setting that was of the creation of, I don't know if it was George Perez or not, but...
Yeah, I seem to think it, like, was in one of its own little strange, you know, South American countries or something, you know, some non-existent but real-sounding country.
Right.
If you're a fan of What's Up, Tiger Lily.
It's like professional wrestling hailing from parts unknown. This latest version of Brother Blood decided to bring his cult to the United States and use media as a way of drawing in new membership and as a way of discrediting anybody who figured out what he was doing and to shut them down. Yeah. So there's a little bit of a play there, A, on religion, and B, on, you know, the power of media as well.
Oh, absolutely. And how, you know, the one can use the other to play play on itself. One of the things that was interesting, though, is that Robin goes undercover as, you know, kind of a new recruit.
Right. You know, it's really interesting how many of these things that we talked about in this first story arc, when we were trying to get out in front of all this, you know, social commentary, whether it be sexuality or religion or drug use or, you know, female women characters and women creators and, you know, any of the things that we get out, we were trying to just talk about how many of these things originated from the Teen Titans.
That's a good point. They seem to be all over the place.
It seems to be the creative staff of the Teen Titans, which we know is like Wolfman and Perez, and I don't remember who later got into the mix, but really wanted to use this book to talk about a lot of very serious issues, using these teenage characters to do so. Really interesting ideas there. A lot of my favorite story arcs in comics, period. And I know yours are yours too. Come from Teen Titans.
Oh yes, that was one of the first books that just really, you know, consistently impressed me. I mean, you had the amazing George Perez art, but you know, you also had the Wolfman storylines were often very well thought out, and I think he and Perez were both you know, very much working hand in glove, and you can very much tell that.
Yeah, they worked as a really solid creative team. But yeah, the thing about the Brother Blood thing that's really interesting is that you don't often, like I said, you don't often kind of get a sock full of quarters to the face with religion, good or bad, you know, in comic books. It's always kind of veiled, or somebody mentions that, you know, the thing is Jewish or something like that. And this... You know, it's really about the dangers of conformity, I guess, is kind of what I took away from this storyline when I read it.
And blind faith, I think a lot of it is. That, you know, when blind faith literally blinds you to everything, even improprieties and terrible acts.
And here's the funny thing is we kind of dogged on DC last week and the week before for their treatment of female comic book characters, and said that kind of Marvel has taken a stronger stance in the past year and a half, you know, in combating inequality. But DC, on the religious front, has, I think, always been out in front of this way more than Marvel has, because not only do you have guys like Brother Blood, but do you remember Batman the Cult?
Oh, yes. I'd forgotten about that. But no, I remember that. It was a big thing.
It was huge because what it happened, because we're not talking about a weird blood cult when we talk about Batman the Cult. Batman the Cult had had a deacon, Joseph Blackfire, was the main bad guy, right? And he was essentially Christian that kind of went off the rocker and led a congregation of a cult congregation in the sewers of like homeless people and kind of the downtrodden and outcast. And he used those people almost like Brother Blood did to create sort of like an army.
Yes.
Then Batman and Robin had to infiltrate and kind of shut down. So there's another instance of this happening, and the only way it stopped was Batman had to beat the crap out of Blackfire, and then his army turned on him. So.
You know, in the Titans, as I remember, it almost got to the point where it was annoying because Brother Blood's power just kept building and building, and you know, the Titans were having to wage a media war against the bad publicity and all, and it turned out there is such a thing as bad publicity,
right?
And but the thing about it was, like, part of the plot, if I recall, was they were literally trying to get the local government to attack, and you know, part of it was literally kind of forcing the government's hand so that they could publicly be seen as being attacked by their own, by the government of the country they were in.
Yeah.
And thereby gaining all kinds of international sympathy and support.
Right. It was almost like in some respects suicide by cop, you know, where you force them to act against you so that then you can use that for sympathy. So
exactly.
It's really interesting. That's really cool. I like that. And again, another one, maybe a little bit more hokey, but you were also discussing the War of the Gods that DC put on in the 90s.
Yes.
Which is a huge crossover for DC, considering it was the 90s. You didn't have these giant 25, 26-part crossovers at the time, but celebrating Wonder Woman's 50th anniversary in comics, they launched this huge... what would happen if you know, the pantheons of the Romans and the Olympians and the Egyptians and the Africans and the Norse and the Babylonians and the Thangarians got together and messed it up?
Yeah, decided they were going to have a pitched blood feud.
Right, and it all started because, of course, Cersei had to, you know, muck it up. That's what happens. And again, George Perez, like I was telling you, I think George Perez has some issues with religion that really he needs to go to therapy, I think, maybe, and look into some of these problems that he's had. I'm wondering who did the... Oh, it was Starlin and Wrightson that did Batman Cult. And that's cool. I want to get my hands on these and read them. It's been a really long time since I touched any of these comics, and I want to really get down and read them because I think there's a lot of interesting concepts in there. But the one that I was cracking up about when it came to this War of the Gods is apparently Black Adam recruits the Suicide Squad to attack Cersei's fortress, and I'm thinking to myself, of everybody that you could get to engage in a pitch to, you know, Donnybrook, God against God, you had to go with the Suicide Squad. You had to go with the Bronze Tiger and
Well, that Black Adam sought out their help,
which is hilarious. That Black Adam sought out their help.
Yeah, there were no other alternatives open to him.
Right. That was the last. That was the last thing he could choose. He couldn't go to the Phantom Stranger or, even the Newsboy Army could have probably been more
Newsboy Legion. Yes. Yeah. The Forever People.
Yeah, probably could have been more efficient a battle force than this was at that point. But Marvel's not without precedent here, because you brought up another one. You are chock full of, and luckily our minds were in the same place for a lot of this. But you were discussing. You brought up the seminal X-Men kind of story arc, which was God Loves, Man Kills.
Yeah, that was back in the days before the trade paperback. And sometimes if you had a kind of big standalone story that was going to be something outrageous or what have you, you would do a trade a graphic novel, rather, which were big magazine size volumes that basically told a whole story that would today be a story arc in a single volume. And this was at the point where you had, this was after Kitty Pryde came on board. And I think as we talked about in the previous incarnation of exploring that Kitty is one of those characters where those rare cases where you do get to see a lot of the, the character's actual, their religious beliefs brought to the forefront. But in this particular case, you have this evangelical preacher who goes after mutant kind as, it's not just Homo sapien versus Homo superior. This is like, the mutants are wrong in God's eyes.
Right, they're an affront.
Yeah, so he uses that, religion as his weapon to combat.
But he
so
really
goes beyond just sort of, the fear and the whole, trying to fight back against perhaps evolutionary loss. It becomes more of a, fighting on religious grounds and trying to.
He loses his mind because his son is a mutant, right? That's what happened. Was he found out that his son was a mutant, and for some reason his shame of that happening kind of drove him insane, and so he decided that it was a plot to basically warp and corrupt mankind through his insanity. So he starts recruiting quote unquote God's chosen, I think, if I remember right. Like, because it was Stryker and the Purifiers that went after him, and this
I believe you're right.
And this is continued, by the way. Like, he keeps popping up periodically, like when Utopia happened, he was a part of that as well. After the mutants got depowered, he went after him with the Purifiers and killed a bunch of them all.
Yeah. Well, this is also where they, it was one of those universal sweeping, kind of like in the X-Men movie where Magneto wants to turn everybody into a mutant. This had one of these things where it would, he had some sort of device to kill off all just mutants.
Right. Because that's the way it works. I mean, you can pick and choose through DNA, right? That it always works out so well when people do that.
Oh, absolutely. It's a foolproof, actually.
Right. It's never gone wrong. It's always been exactly what was supposed to happen. That's just another instance of kind of cultish behavior or personal agenda being couched in religion. But it was another interesting take on the concept of blind faith. And how you shouldn't necessarily follow anything blindly.
Yes. And also how faith can become all-consuming.
Yes.
How it can, where it, if you're not careful, it can completely destroy your ability to distinguish.
How faith can become an obsession.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely, yeah. So what else you got, my man? You're coming strong.
Oh,
with
yeah.
It.
I again, apologies if we're repeating anything, because one of the ones that really struck me way back in the day, and I don't know that it ever went anywhere, and it was so frustrating. because prior to Fables, Bill Willingham was so hit and miss. there was a, you know, I was following the elementals off and on, usually only when he, Willingham himself was drawing, because I didn't like a lot of the replacement artists. And it took me many years to go back and read and realize, well, no, actually, you know, I was missing out on some of his best writing because it wasn't him drawing.
Yeah, he wasn't torn between two mediums at that point.
So there was a storyline where there was a, again, we're back to the, you know, televangelist preacher. This was very much going after the big, back, this was back in the day when, you know, you couldn't,
you couldn't hit somebody with your coat without running into a Benny Hinn.
Yeah, there was, every channel had 6 or 7 or 12 you know, televangelists going on. Every town had these giant mega churches that were, you know, big as office blocks. And so basically you had this preacher who receives a vision that he takes to be an angel of some kind, and it commands him to do the God's bidding, as it were. And in a way it was kind of an exploration of how, you know, faith can corrupt your ability to really think things through. And so he uses his, you know, his ministry and his presence in the, you know, his national presence to recruit God's army. You know, he's looking for some number of, I forget, like, you know, 1,000 or something like that, ex-police or ex-military.
Wow.
And you know, they even have this little graphic God needs and little silhouettes and, of police, military. They basically, what happened was that what follows is you get this little bits and pieces of how they recruit just like some kind of just awful torture guy that mostly works for some South American dictator to come in and help orchestrate these outrageous deaths for all of these people, because the idea is that it's you know, the concentration of whatever number, it's going to break down all of these people being killed off in these strange ways. A number of them are going to be resurrected as God's army against the elementals and against supernatural.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are just these weird things, like they, you know, hook this, put this guy on an exercise bike and shock him every time he slows down.
Oh, jeez.
Until he, you know, his heart finally explodes, or, you know, they douse one woman in liquid nitrogen and shatter her.
Oh,
which
my God.
Mythbusters proved that doesn't actually happen with organic material. you can't shatter people. But
we can literally suspend our disbelief for
that's
comic
right.
books.
In the elementals, you can. They but basically at the end of it all, there were like eight. There was like this team of super beings, and some of the coolest looking designs for characters you know, some of the best, coolest superhero designs, and they were all named for Bible verses.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like each one of them, they're, you know, it shows this two-page splash. It's got, oh gosh, it's like, you know, one of them was Genesis and then the verse, and one of them was Leviticus and the verse and stuff like that. So, you know, one guy, Genesis guy, is like, actually inspired one of my own characters, because he's got this really bitchin' green costume, and he's got like a slingshot, you know, this high-powered slingshot, and you know, just a kick-ass looking character. And then there was like this four-armed bestial looking guy, and this chick with wings, and one guy that looked like he was, the costume suggested he would probably had super speed powers, and you know, one guy that I think was Judges, a certain verse from Judges was his thing, and he's just like this, just, you know, built like a brick shithouse guy.
Right.
And it was just what was so cool about it was like that spread had so much potential, and then that storyline just kind of disappeared, and I stopped reading. So I never got to see what was going on.
You never got to see the end game of what was happening. Which is a shame. Did they ever resolve it, or?
I don't know, because I just never followed it that far.
Well, do you think in some respects that was a... because so many of these things we've discussed have been like analogies for like the Justice League or the Avengers. Do you think in some respect that's what we were looking at there? Or
I think a lot of that, what that was literally, you know, you couldn't swing a dead cat and not hit a televangelist at that time. So part of it was, you know, addressing that. And how would, in a world where superpower things are possible...
Right.
You know, what would happen if some entity, you know, tapped into blind faith?
Like as a power source?
Yeah, and, you know, utilized that kind of blind faith to get someone to do his bidding or its bidding to ultimately, you know, create its own army for its ends by duping him into thinking it was for you know, it was by divine providence.
Right.
And, you know, and the end result was this this army to mainly be used against the elementals. And I think ultimately it was probably... the big part of elementals was a big thing where the main big bad early on was trying to conjure up some sort of elemental or extra dimensional force called Shadow Spear, and that it, though they defeated him, some of it still got out, and so that all kinds of weird crap was happening everywhere. But you know, the thing that it was just kind of an interesting way of touching on what, you know, became the after effect of all that heavy duty stuff was, you know, where you had all these televangelists going on, is, you know, how many of them were ultimately outed as being corrupt.
Well, and it's something
and how that power got corrupted. And you see that corruption already in this guy. Like, you know, there's a scene where he's obviously just finished a tryst with his secretary. And then, is, you know, they find out that his daughter's been sleeping with the cameraman, and now he's going to have her sent away somewhere, and you know, his married daughter has been sleeping with one of the cameramen, and how they're going to, you know, just ruin his credit line, and, you know, destroy him by use of his power. And it shows how already he is primed to use his power corruptly.
Right. And that, you know, that's an interesting thing. When I was researching, you know, and we've talked about it, when you were researching anything that we ever do on this show, it never ceases to amaze, and it shouldn't, I guess, amaze me that, you know, you've got these comic creators that are looking through, when they're creating, whether it's art or whether it's, you know, the actual storylines that they're writing, they're pulling from their own experiences. They're applying themselves to the page, whether it be what they want to become, what they hope to become, what they aspire to be, but they're also taking any of their insecurities and their fears and their kind of anger at what they're seeing happen in the world, and they're applying that rule as well to what they're doing. So like you said, at the time at which it came out, yeah, they're gonna plumb the depths and call Twain on popular culture. So also don't forget that these guys that are writing these books, even now, are way more insightful than I think anybody gives them credit for. They're not just writing funny papers. You know, they're seeing things in a way that most of us don't. They're able to take the ideas that they see out there, and whether it's active or subconscious that they do it, and transfer those things to page in such a way to make us have shows like this, to make us really think about
what's going on in the world. So at the time at which a lot of these things are happening, you know, this show has kind of become a Trieste on cults and comics, which is perfectly fine, because that's how a lot of, you know, that's a lot of the fear that's out there. That's a lot of the worry that exists in the world when it comes to religion. You have a lot more stories about Brother Blood and William Stryker than you do about Kitty Pryde being, you know, Jewish, or the Thing sure. being Jewish, you
or
know,
Daredevil being devoutly Catholic, or
right. And there's obviously a reason for that, right? The reason is because we tend to identify more with the things that we're worried about and try to hash out those feelings on paper than we do the things that we're comfortable with. And one of the things I wanted to talk about this was this idea that Cole and I had that, you know, a lot of these, we've talked a lot about secret identities on the show. I think we've probably had 4 or 5 issues on that topic alone in one way or another. And I started thinking about why there
while
were secret...
While failing, oddly enough, to maintain our own.
Right. I mean,
we
I pretty much just put out
a good
cards.
Job of keeping secret identities here.
We should really work on that. I don't know why we really let it slide that of who we are. I mean, I've been to so many different prisons, apparently, according to all the shows
true.
That I've been on, that my nom de coeur doesn't even hold up anymore. The rap sheet is so long. but when you look at the idea of the secret identity, it was really kind of built around this time frame, this idea. And by these people, by these creators who are predominantly, and I say this, and again, I hate doing this because I really walk a fine line of feeling like I'm going to offend, but they're created predominantly by Jewish comic book creators. Siegel and
of course, you're saying that as a matter of fact. It simply is
right.
The case. They a great many of the creators of the comics we love were Jewish.
Correct. But why would you feel, and I was researching this, and nothing ever came out and said this, I'm not saying this is an original idea, but why would Jewish comic creators create this identity, this secret identity idea for what they create, whether it be Superman or any, you know, any of the Stan Lee creations and Jack Kirby creations? Well, the obvious answer is because, you know, in the story they need to protect their loved ones. They need to, you know, they're obviously doing it for a reason that's fairly, it's spelled out fairly early in the comic.
Oh, absolutely. And also, you know, there are some precedent in classic literature for that as well. But, you know, I think that one of the things we talked about before the show that Andrew brought up was rather poignant of, there could also be a very underlying
there's a sociological aspect to this too, and that is that at that time period when these books were being created, to be an outwardly Jewish person was to live in fear of being captured, and maybe not by you, but maybe by your grandfather, maybe by your father, of being captured, of being killed, of being put in concentration camps. So many people lived under this guise of, I mean, I have to go to America, or I have to go to another country and change my name and hide my family and travel by night so I don't get caught. That whether it was stories told to you or whether it was your own experiences, that is going to leak out onto the page because you're trying to make sense of how that feels and how to process that information. So personally, I feel there's a lot more of that going on than we give credit for. You know, why, you know, a lot of lines are drawn between, you know, Superman essentially being the golem, you know, the creation of the Jewish religion that is a machination, a superpower machination that is used to bring bring warring tribes and warring countries together and sit down at the table and speak because it's too powerful to ignore. And that's really what Superman was kind of designed to do. And, you know, when you start looking at all these things and putting them together, you realize how much
religion has entered comic books. Not just Judeo-Christian religion, but you know, a lot of research goes into things, and we touched on this in the first one, that the Justice League, as Grant Morrison created it, was essentially the Olympian pantheon. You know, yes. Your Superman is Zeus. Your Batman is Hades. Your Hermes. Your Hephaestus. All of these things are built in. So much religion kind of seeps into comic books that it makes you wonder, you know, how much of it was planned and how much of it was later realized that it was kind of a subconscious entry into things to deal with certain emotions and feelings that you have. That's all I have for that. I kind of went off the rails a little bit there, but you know, I believe that to be a universal truth, that whenever you're creating, you're letting a piece of yourself out onto the page, and I'm sure that some of it was out there as a thing that is acknowledged as, you know, this is what I plan to do, but some of it, you know, I wonder if they ever looked back and said, man, I didn't realize I was doing this, but I put this out there as a part of myself.
Absolutely. And the other thing we talked about as well was we touched on it a bit with the War of the Gods, but how prevalent different pantheons became, especially at Marvel and DC.
Oh,
because
yeah.
It's good public domain. There's not a lot of active worship of, you know, Odin or
right, you're not going to stir up a lot of feathers by saying, "Oh, that Loki, he did it again."
Yeah. Like,
there aren't a lot of polytheists out there that are going to get really upset by that. But I should do some research into that. I wonder if there's anybody that got really offended by like the Thor movies or something like that. I kind of want to look into that and see if that ever happened.
Yeah, I don't remember any backlash, but then that's kind of a very small minority.
So was there anything in the last issue that you can remember that you wanted to touch on in this one, maybe to clarify or just that you have any other ideas on?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think the big thing was that it seems to me in the first one we were really struggling with trying to research and define the characterization of religion specific to, you know, which characters were portrayed with, you know, their faith at the forefront or as part of their character, as part of a very well-rounded character, without so much talking about how religion itself is portrayed. So I like the fact that we're kind of operating on the other side of that coin.
And we always say when we're doing these shows that there's so much that we miss that we want to go back and revisit certain topics. And this is exactly why. Because it's so easy kind of in the setup. A lot of these should be two-parters, because in the setup you want to talk about the comic books themselves because they're so much fun.
Yes.
You know, and this is what we grew up on. We grew up on reading about how, you know, your blue-eyed, ever-loving thing is Jewish, and how Kitty Pryde turned away Dracula with her Star of David, which is still one of my favorite religious...
Well, that and how in the same breath, as it were, the same sequence... In fact, I think even right before that, Logan failed to turn him away by making a cross with his claws.
Right, and that's
because
technically...
Because at least at that point, pre-Origin, he would often talk about how he was raised atheist.
Right, and I mean, that's pretty powerful, because that's not just one claw, that's like three claws when you get down to it.
Well, yeah, he could have done a triple cross.
He got the triple cross.
Which is even worse than a double cross.
Yeah, right. That's some Hitchcockian shit right there. The triple cross. That's Strangers on a Train. But yeah, I mean, that's still one of my favorite religious artifacts in a story, is that you know, and I think that was the big reveal, sort of, that Kitty Pryde was Jewish, or at least the first time it's really kind of been tossed in your face was, you know,
Logan tries to turn this guy away with a cross, then all of a sudden you realize that you have to have faith in your symbol in order to turn somebody away. And all of a sudden Kitty Pryde pulls out her Star David, and Dracula gives one of his, you know, runaway things and scampers
off. Well,
actually,
what had happened, because he grabs her by the neck.
Oh, yeah.
And she always wore her Star of David necklace, and he burned his hand.
Yes.
He wasn't half expecting any sort of trouble getting what he wanted.
I don't want no trouble out of you. Yeah, see? Yes. Why can't Dracula be voiced by Peter Lorre in every... Yes, I don't want trouble.
I don't want any trouble from you.
Well,
or Garrison Keillor.
Oh, God. I really want to do Garrison Keillor.
It's been a kind of bloodless week this week. And
I have to head down to the mountain. From the mountain to the village.
I had to fly into Lake Wobegon, my hometown.
So good.
Found Herb Krebsaw out lounging, napping in his hammock, and I drank his blood.
I drank his blood! Mrs. Munerspaw, and her pie on the window. I snuck through in a mist and drank her blood.
Right out of the Chatterbox Cafe for the all-you-could-eat people.
People? Very nice. So, once again, as we are wont to do, we are coming up against it. And I'm wondering if you have any like final type thoughts for this issue of Hey Kids Comics before we revisit this again in another year or so.
Yes, I'm curious to see a couple of things. I'd like to see what happens down the line. I'd like to see how religion, who's going to dare in this day and age to tackle religion. And, that can be a dangerous ground. And I guess, one of the biggest things that has happened, I believe, since the last one, but this may have been around the time of the original time we explored this, was, Batman having the audacity to hire a Muslim.
Oh, yes. Batwing. Or no, it was Night Runner. I think was the one that was such a big deal. Yeah, the French. He was French Muslim, I believe. The one in Paris who was a parkour, artist, and yeah, everybody just lost their marbles over that when it happened. Like how dare Batman? And then you look back on the what was Batman's group?
Was it Batman Incorporated or?
Well, that was Batman Incorporated.
Like the Batman of many countries.
Yeah, the League of Batman or whatever it was, where you had the British, the Knight and Squire, and you had the Sombrero or not the Sombrero.
Yeah.
Man of Bats. You think Man of Bats was Christian? I beg to differ, my friends. I think you better take a good hard look at that. Red Robin or whoever it was that was a part of his motley crew of people there. Here's the thing about religion is I really believe that when we talk about sexuality and gay marriage and religion and North Star and all of those things that we've so often talked about, it's really easy to, it's safe, okay? And after a fashion, it's safe to talk about those things in comic books because they're out front now, with actual legislation and a social conversation that's happening every day. Like, it would be like legalization of marijuana comic books. Like, oh, everybody's talking about it, so we'll talk about it. I think that there's still this idea, it's so charged. I think religion is still so charged in our society that it's such a closeted conversation still that it's hard to get an honest dialogue about religion even in comic books going, because it seems to be such an easy thing to talk about that I think everybody's actually horrified to discuss it.
Yeah, and I think because it can create such a firestorm of controversy, because it is, one one of the other things you run into at times is that people get so fiercely protective of their own personal religious stance and religious belief that, you know, they can't abide, in some cases can't abide there being any other ways of thinking on, you know, one end of the extreme, or on the other, you know, just, you know, don't dare get anything wrong, or
right, exactly. Be
perceived as having, you know, pointing a finger at one particular group, or, you know, it's like so often happens in movies and television where, you know, somebody will say, well, you know, that paints this, I don't know why Garrison Keillor, that paints this group in a bad light. But, you know, Fatal Instinct, I think, may have come out in production. Somebody decided that was painting homosexuals in a bad light. And I went and saw the movie, and I thought, there was nothing about this. You know, somebody decided something about this movie.
Right.
And decided to actively protest and try to disrupt the film and stuff like that. And I think that's one of the big risks you have, is that people try to project what they think you're trying to say onto things, and then create controversy that isn't necessarily there.
Right. Exactly.
And religion is a great way to stir up controversy without even trying.
And the thing is, I think that it's controversy that most people don't want. Like, it's okay to sell comic books based on sexual controversy, or female controversy, or, you know, geek baiting, as we've come to call it, you know? Yeah. You can't geek bait with religion. It's so powerful and so horrifying to so many people to have a, like you said, the possibility of actually overstepping your bounds. Whereas when we're talking about, like, you know, homosexuality in comic books, or, you know, I don't know, women in comic books, the Hank Pym, you know, it's okay to talk about that because there's a social conversation happening. Religion is still such a thing that's so scary to people to get wrong that I don't think people want to talk about it yet. So I think you're right. I'm really curious to see who's going to try to get out in front of this in the next year and talk about it. And with a Daredevil TV show coming, I think that we might start seeing some stuff, because a big part of, if you're going to talk about Daredevil in the past 10 years, a huge part of that conversation is Catholicism.
Oh, yes.
So I'm really curious to see what happens. All right. We'll wrap this up. We're going to wrap this up. I think we've done the topic justice once again. I feel that this was a really good show. How do you feel about it, Cole?
Oh, I do. I think this has been a really good arc. We'll be next week concluding this arc.
What are we concluding it with?
We are concluding this with the it's holding a mirror up to reality, or holding, I forget the exact word.
It's okay. We'll get it right next week.
But yeah, absolutely. We better. But
so yeah, it's been a great arc. It's been awesome to go in and re-explore these things and realize not only what we might have missed, but also
holding up a mirror to reality.
There you go. So what's the impetus of holding up a mirror? What's the onus of holding a mirror to reality?
That is where we go into the times when comics make the concerted effort to be as real as possible. Excuse me, El Belcherino.
Oh, that's good.
to bring in as much of the real world. And granted, in many cases, we've touched on that throughout this arc. But, you know, historical, current event type things. You know, one that'll undoubtedly come up is Barack Obama's presence. You know, we haven't had a president on the cover of a comic in a long time.
Right.
I think, you know, back in the 70s, you had Jimmy Carter's hand.
Yes.
When he signed the pardon.
Wow. I didn't even remember that. But
yeah, he signed the pardon for the Hulk.
I remember that. Wow. Okay. Well, why don't you apply some thinly or some thickly spread plugs over the show at this point, and we'll carry on into this good night.
Absolutely. Of course, we're coming to you through the auspices of the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com, where you can listen to this show. You can find What You Think, the movie show that's like the drive home after a movie. What You Think Maleficent will be appearing very shortly.
Very cool.
You can find, of course, that's with the unmountable Bobby Blakey, who is also artist for You Are Here, which is the signature comic for the JCU Sunday Funnies. You can find a number of podcasts, the Rantcore Pit, Eddie Medina and I. Every other week we have the Rantcore Pit, and that's followed the following week by the Rantcore Pit Live, which is a live show that we do on Deep Ellum on Air from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Central every other Sunday. So you can check out the live feed and even call in. So we encourage that. We'd like someone other than Andy to call in. We love when Andy calls, but we really are trying to encourage more people to.
I've been backing off so that you can get other calls. So
we're hoping to get other people calling.
I like to hear my own voice, just not that much. I mean, geez. So yeah, check us out at the Jedi Cole Universe. Lots of great shows coming up from us and from everybody else that's out there. I'm sure there's all kinds of new projects in the work and conventions coming up and all manner of shenanigans. Speaking of conventions, what do we got for conventions, Cole?
Oh yes, if you're keen on conventions in Texas, and there's one darn near every weekend throughout the year, especially this time of year. Except I actually did have one weekend where the next week statement was followed by no known conventions this week. Is the Convention Awareness Project Texas, which is conventionawarenesstx.blogspot.com, where I maintain a year-long list of every convention in Texas. You click on the name of the convention, it will take you to their website, so you can find out even more if you want to figure out what does this even mean to me? And I kid you not, I have updated that thing 20 times, maybe more this year. Right. I'm constantly discovering new conventions.
It never fails.
No, it never does.
Did you ever tell me what the weirdest convention you added onto that is?
Oh, gosh. Well, I did have a pinball convention one time. Somebody approached me because they were having some kind of wrestling. It was like a wrestling and something else. I can't remember what the other thing was convention. And
it was wrestling. Oh God, what was it? You had told me that.
It was bizarre.
It was so awesome, and I can't remember.
It wasn't like wrestling in a gun show or anything like that, because that would be, you know, that's a bad idea. Like Sock and Orange Night, you know, they just you don't really want to give people a pair of socks and two oranges when they come in the stadium.
No, you don't. That's a horrible idea.
But yeah, it was just really bizarre. But that was one of the few times where someone actually sought me out and said, "Would you put this on?" And I'm like, you know, that you even bothered to ask, of course.
So that we make that known too. If you have any conventions that you want to have added, please feel free to contact the Jedi Cole Universe and Jedi Cole directly and request that those be added too.
Yes, you can write to me at jcumail@yahoo.com anytime. Please write to us for any number of reasons. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to get some feedback on the shows. Love to get some suggestions for future issues and story arcs. And you know, we'd love to hear from you.
And make it as weird as possible. Find your weirdest conventions. I want to hear something weirder than all this.
That's right. But if it's in Texas, if it's not, I'm afraid I won't be listing it.
If it's not a go sit on something.
That's right, yeah. If Angelo sends us in some convention, we got this big old, you know, the Bronx comic show there coming up here.
Why didn't we bring Angelo?
Put that on your convention site there, because I'm going to be out there. I'm going to be watching out for you. I'm going to get some of those quarter comics.
Not for nothing, but, you know, he was a nice guy. I just had to dust him off with my knuckles a little bit.
It's sort of like it happens, you know.
It's the cannoli and brass knuckles convention.
He's trying to mess with the cosplay ladies. You got to respect these ladies. They're good girls. You don't go messing around with them. Just because they dress a little, you know, that's a little skimpy. You know, they're showing a lot of skin. That don't mean you got no right to go there and, you know, make an ass of yourself. So I'll fix you, but good.
I'll fix you, but good. And then next week you can come to my brass knuckles and cannoli convention. It's down on 5th and Main. You stop by, you'll get a
convention
get a
called my fist in your face.
That's right. It's the
it's kind of only so much a convention is to get together. My fist gets together with your face. You're talking about nothing about. Okay.
We had to move locations last year. We got a little trouble for my boot in your ass.
We had some scheduling conflict.
Some people couldn't show up because of my boot was in their ass. They were looking at me. But not for nothing, I got a big heart. You know, I invited them back this year. So, Angelo, come on down. All right. On that note, I think we're going to end this thing. I'm glad we got to bring Angelo
also,
back in.
Also, be sure and follow us on Twitter at TheJedi.
All right, now join us next week. Join us next week, not for nothing, but we got a good show coming up where we're going to bring Angelo in. It's going to be a good time.
I'm going to bring him a mirror. We're going to hold it up to reality, and we're going to see what's going on there.
It's
going to
be like Grease, you know, that scene in the car with the Kaneki when he's got the mirror. Oh, hey, I love that scene.
It's like the Fonz, you know. I don't need that, bro. Call my ass. It's perfect.
That's right. I'm going to punch a jukebox. It's going to play your face off into that ditch. It's going to be great. All right, guys. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Join us next week. It's going to be amazing. Buy, sell, collect comic books. We've got some good ones out there. Angelo suggests you get some William Stryker, God Loves, Man Kills, maybe some Brother Blood. Pick it up. Maybe have first books in the library. Not for nothing. I'll break your face if you don't support your local library. Angelo, out.